Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Point, the home services podcast that focuses on marketing and operational solutions to help you get better. Because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Now, let's cut through the bullshit and get to the point.
What's up, To The Point listeners? I have zero doubt that we're going to cut through the bullshit and get to the point today because our guest, oh, baby.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be fire. I know it. I'm excited. Man, I know he probably would have wanted this to be live, but man, the risk was just too great. That's
way too high.
How you know it's going to be a great podcast. So everybody, I'm your host, Cristiano of To The Point Home Services Podcast with my man, my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul. What's up, brother?
Man, the energy today is off the charts. Just to give listeners a little behind the scenes, on the mic check, we asked our guest today to count to 10, and he refused to do anything but count by millions, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million. So I'll tell you what, man, today is going to be next level off the charts. I'm pumped.
Yeah. So listen, we typically record all of our podcasts on a Wednesday. It's podcast production day, but because our guest is a little bit of a prima donna and we wanted him on here that bad.
A little bit of a triple OG
and to share his story, we shifted it to a Thursday to accommodate him, but super excited to have him on too. I've become friends with him and I love his story. I love his passion for the trades, and like his mentality is really Next Gen, which is the name of the company and the owner of Next Gen, Mr. Ishmael Valdez. Ish, what's up, my man?
What's up?
Today is going to be triple OG rated. Thanks to Mr. Jim Batson for tossing that out there. I thought that was a perfect rating for today's podcast. So listen, I don't want to waste a second. We're going to do a few things on this podcast a little differently than normal. A lot of times, Paul and I will talk about some different things to have some different banter, but you have some questions that were submitted on your Facebook group page, Service Avengers, that I want to make sure we get. Yep. We have plenty of time to get to. And because I listened to you on the Service Titan webinar, I know that you blew through that hour super fast. So I want to get right to it.
Dude, I talked to Jackie for like literally an hour, and I thought it was like 15 minutes. We went through it quick, so it was pretty cool.
So let's.
That was your first official like webinar/broadcast, yeah. Right? So this is number two.
This is number two, and Chris, you should have been number one. Actually, I promised you like a couple of times, but I just did from getting all these shops set up and trying to get all the operation nailed down. I had to reschedule a couple of times.
Dude, listen.
Well, you're legendary on our books because you're the first person to ghost us.
Yeah, you were the first person to ghost us, man.
My bad. That's won't all happen again.
Forgiven.
It's all good. But if you ain't first, you last. So now I'm last. Anyhow, so let's get right into it. So, welcome to The Point. Glad to finally get you on here. I'm excited, man, for this podcast. I'm excited for everybody to kind of hear what you've accomplished because, perception always isn't reality. Like, you hit bumps in the road just like everybody else on your path to 35 mil, which I know is going to be 100 mil. That's what you're saying. He's looking for that 100 milli number to get to. So I'm excited to talk through some of these details. But let's do this first. Why don't you go ahead and let's let all of our listeners know kind of a little bit of how you got into the trades and then where you're at today and kind of what your agenda is, you know, on your path to 100 million. Like what is Ishmael's big goal?
So I'll give you my elevator pitch on who I am. I'm not going to bore you guys. I'm not going to play the sob story on it because everybody's been through shit. To be honest with you, I'm a hustler, right? I want to get to 100 mil the fastest, most healthiest way possible. That's my overall goal. But I'm sorry to repeat myself if I do, but my goal is to see the $100 million process from zero to 100, right?
And you're going to be what this year?
I started this year. We're going to probably end up between 36, 38 million, cool, depending on how winter treats me.
And you're what?
When did you start?
5 years in? Four years?
Four and a half years ago. This is our fifth year in business.
Awesome.
So this is our fifth year in business. It's insane, man. I'm telling you. But dude, no credit to me. It's all been my team. This is the best year we've had in since we started, both profit wise and operations wise, and structure wise. The structure is superb now. So I started heating and air conditioning. I was 17 years old when I started. I was a counter guy. What contractors call it, counter guy. I was literally selling equipment and material to all these contractors. Every day they would go in there and pick up equipment material to the shop. It was called Howard Industry. And the owner of the company taught me a lot. His name was Jeff Winter. I worked for him for about 9 years. And never in my life did I want to leave. The dude treated me amazing. Like, the dude was paying me a shit ton of money. And I was like, 23, 24, 25 years old. So I never intended to leave. I thought that was going to be like my forever home, Yeah. After 9 years of working for somebody, that's pretty loyal.
So you were on the counter
for 9 years?
Yeah, man. Selling. I would go out there and talk to contractors. I would go out there and train them, right? If new product came about, whether it was American Standard or regular parts or whatever, I would go to their shops and talk to them. But 9 years, I was behind a counter.
So when did you make the move, or how did you make the move from counter to starting your own company?
2015, I think it was. There was this guy, and again, and I'm going to bring out names because, dude, that's who I am. I'm not going to hide anything. His name's Ken Starr. Probably the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to me all at the same time.
I'm listening.
Right? The dude was like probably one of the hungriest dudes I've ever met in my life. He had a chip on his shoulder too. He had been in contracting for his dad and for other companies, all the major players here in SoCal. He worked for the ARSs, the service champs, just everybody in the industry here. He had worked for them, and he started his own company, 13 or 14 around there. And he was struggling, right? He was struggling, and he would always go to Howard Industry and just shoot the shit with me and talk shit or whatever. And he kept trying to recruit me. Like over and over and over. And I just kept saying like, nah, man, like, dude, like this dude is treating me good. I'm making a ton of money. I'm happy. I don't have any stress. It's chill, you know, but I've always had, I did always have that, man, what would happen if I go out there, cause dude, during this 9 year period, I shit you not, like the 9 year period that I was at Howard Industry, dude, I probably had, I shit you not, over 1,000 different freaking people trying to recruit me. Literally every single day was like, hey, come work for me. Hey, dude, you could do this. Hey, imagine if we could do this. And I kept saying no until, Ken started his own company, and he kind of sold me on a dream, and it was cool, man. Like, we hustled for 4 years. We grew that company, Home Comfort USA. We got it up to, I think, like 21 mil, like in 5 years or 4 years.
Nice.
So it was pretty cool.
Hey, so what was your first role in that company?
Oh, that's the third time you've talked over me in this podcast. The third time.
I'm excited.
You know what?
Hey, Paul's excited,
hey,
homie.
Listen.
He finally has somebody that's going to spit fire.
I'll tell you
what.
That's
what I'm talking about.
I'll tell you what. Now's the fourth time. So, you know what, Paul, I'm feeling a little frustrated with our little partnership here, our little ghost. I think I got to pull a card. I got to reach my back pocket, see if I have an alternate solution. I'd like to introduce my new co-host, Mr. Travis Ringy from ProSkill. Hey, welcome to the show, buddy.
For real? You just literally...
Oh, hell yeah. Dude, tell him who just stepped in the mic right now. That guy's a fucking legend right there.
Well, so listen, we brought Travis in, one, because I know you guys are friends, and we didn't tell Paul just for fun. So it actually worked out good that you talked over me, because it gave me a good reason to have to pull him in. Don't worry, man. Much love, man. Much love. So listen, Travis Rankin from ProSkill out here in Anthem. Titan of the Year. Been on the podcast before. I thought this would be great to have him on as a co-host. Another co-host, which is the first time we've done this. So Travis is going to have some questions he's going to ask too. All of us, we're going to fire away. So listen, this is no different. It's just now there's three of us hosting this thing. So let's get into it.
Hey, bro, you just took this podcast to a different level. For people that don't know who Travis is, I get the pleasure of talking to this dude every day, texting back and forth on operations, and we shoot, different ideas back and forth. This dude makes me look like a fucking preschooler, homie. This guy's in Harvard University. guy's a fucking true. This hey, is a quad OG.
Bro, you told him ahead of time you were coming on and paid him on this. What'd you do? What'd you do? What's the deal?
We're trying to get to 100 million.
I didn't know.
So let's get into this thing, man. Okay, so one, real quick, two, for our listeners, I think this is a pretty cool story I've heard you talk about, and you've told me this before, but what's the meaning behind the name Next Gen? Like, just give me the quick, like, the reason you came up with that name. It's pretty straightforward, but what is it?
So we were called Next Gen, bro, like, when we were, like, you know, I think I was like 25, 26 years old, and I was hustling. Like, I was working at Howard Industry, right?
Yeah.
And it was like I got like five or six installers that were like buddies of mine, like from high school, and we bumped roads at Howard Industry during the time, and it was like five or six of us, bro, and it was like 25, 24 year old punks. Just hustling, right? I was doing like cousin's house, my aunt's house. They had a bunch of friends. We were on social media, like trying to like do jobs, right? On the side, like trying to start our own company. And we were just doing it and mess around. And in Spanish, Next Gen is la nueva generación, right? And we kept calling ourselves, oh, we're going to be the next generation of contracting. We're going to be the next generation, right? And then after a while, like obviously when I went with Kent Starr and we started a company and all that, the name Next Generation just kind of, it was too long, right? So I kind of just abbreviated and I cut it down to Next Gen. I wanted it to mean nothing, but to mean something to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's cool. And it's the red, white, and blue. I love it.
Yes, sir.
So real quick too, and then listen, Travis, feel free to just fire away, man. I know you had some questions too. So just kind of, you know, interrupt kind of like Paul does. I love you, brother. You know, I do want to say something real quick. I know you're very active in the Facebook groups and stuff like that, too, and you're super passionate. I'm going to leave it at that. I respect the passion. I respect the hustle and the grind. But I also know that, you know, inside there is a heart, too. You had the Project X. Tell everybody about what you've done, because you've had some really good success early and quick, and you're just scratching the surface, as we've talked about. But, like, let them know, like, about the Project X side of Ish.
So, Project X came about, dude. I'll tell you a quick story how I even came up with the name. I was in Palm Desert. I was starting the new branch in Palm Desert. It was like a year into the business. I wanted to open up a different location because a buddy of mine named Sean worked over there and lived over there in Palm Desert.
Yep.
And I'm passing by, and we just had lunch, and we're passing by in a hill, like a huge, like just hill. There's a sign that says Project X. And we're just passing by, right? And I tell Sean, hey, Sean, what does that mean? And he's like, I don't know. So I Googled it, right? And it's like a charity event that they do like in Palm Desert, like some kind of it's good deeds kind of thing, right?
Yep.
So when I was passing by, I was like, you know what, bro? We need to do something. We need to do something for the community, right? Because God keeps blessing us. You know, we exploded our first year. We had a big plans of doing, you know, our second year was supposed to be 25 mil, but you know, we fell short, a little bit short of it.
Yep.
And that's where the idea came about. I was like, dude, I can't just be like, you know, hustling out there, making a ton of money and not giving back to the community and giving back to the military. Right. So dude, from high school, and now, like, I've had tons of friends that been in the war, that been in the military for ever and a day. And one of my best friends was in the military, and we actually did a Project X for him. He was like 4 years in Afghanistan. And when it hit me is because we were chilling one day in his house, and we were like barbecuing over, and he came out and he showed me like a box of Jordans, right? Like a regular box of Jordans. Inside of that box of Jordans, homie, was, I shit you not, probably like 25, 30 different containers of pills that they wanted, the doctors wanted him to take, because he was like, you know, waking up in the middle of the night, like thinking he was at war or something, like, or PTSD. he was having a ton of nightmares and all that. And that shit, when that happened and he told me that story, everything clicked. I was like, you know what? I'm going to call this Project X and I'm going to do it for myself. It was my marketing company at the time that kept telling me, like, hey, I hear that you're donating a system today. I was like, yeah, there's like our fifth, sixth system this year. And they're like, well, how come you don't tell people about it? I'm like, cause I don't want people to think that I'm trying to, you know, market so I could gain. I was like, dude, just keep it on the low. I want to do it for myself. And they're like, no, you gotta tell everybody, you gotta film it. And that's when it just came and trickled into effect.
Yeah, good for you, dude. How convenient, it's called X. So if you guys don't know who Next Gen's logo, it's got a big X in it.
Ish, I appreciate that. I think giving, you know, privately is a great quality as well. But I got to flip the script because you ask me this all the time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
5 years ago, looking back, did you ever imagine you would be where you are today?
No, man. I had gotten betrayed at the time, back to that home comfort story. Me and Ken bump heads like around, you know, it was like after summer or whatever. I think the financials weren't all there in the company because I wasn't involved in that part of the company. I was the operation guy, right? Like he had a sales team and after it sold, then it would fall on my lap and then I would take care of it and make sure it got, you know, the jobs got funded and everything. So he had a really good, at the time he had a really good sales force, right? And I helped him grow it. We did really, really well. And to this day, like I always look back into it because I never, like if he would have never done what he did, I would have still been there. That's the type of dude that I am. Right. And once that thing happened that, you know, we bump heads and we had a split, dude, I still remember that feeling. Like I still remember 5 years ago, like I had to go to my brother's shop, which was right around the corner. And I sat down on a little porch that he has. And I was there for like 15 minutes by myself, like after me and him had bumped heads and he had let me go. And I'm sitting down there, like, and I still have that feeling in my stomach of me telling my brother, for those of you who don't know, I never had like a really like a dad figure or whatever. And my mom passed away when I was like three years old. So I never had a mom either. But my brother was like my dad. He was always like, nah, dude, don't give up. You know, he always pushed me. And to answer your question, Travis, that feeling that I had in 2016 or 15 or whatever, it's still to this day, I'm still like chasing that feeling away. And I never, ever, ever in my imagination thought that, you know, this many people would come together to even work for me. You know what I'm saying? I was 27 years old, 28 years old, bro. Like who the fuck wants to work for a 28 year old, you know, cholo looking dude, right? that doesn't even know if it, you know what I'm saying? Like I look like a fucking, like a gangster. So
well,
at the time I was like, I had a shit ton of doubts. Yeah. I never imagined that God would bless me for this.
So,
for sure.
So that's one. That's awesome. Like I just learned some more stuff. So that's pretty cool. Like talk about overcoming adversity. This actually reminds me, Paul, if you remember one of our early episodes with Jens Pulver, who is a former UFC lightweight champion, was on the podcast talking about his motivation, which is what I'm going to ask you next. His motivation was he came, you know, he grew up in the Pacific Northwest. He was in an abusive home, like a lot of domestic violence. His dad, you know, beat his mom and his, you know, sister and his and him. And one time his dad stuck a shotgun in his mouth and said, you're not worth, you know, I pulled the trigger, but you're not worth the bullet. And then he beat him up with the back of the gun. And so his motivation, we call it middle finger motivation, was he said, I'm going to be on the stage, man. I'm going to be the champion. I'm going to be this. And he was a two-time state champion in wrestling with the UFC, was a world champion, you know, in lightweight, quickest knockout in UFC history. And he got on TV live and gave the middle finger to his dad and said, I told you I was going to call you out. And then he eventually amended that relationship with his dad later on. His dad passed away early. But that was his motivator from him as a kid, like a 6-7-year-old kid, was that. It carried him all the way through his success in life. So would you say, like, your brother was kind of what you said is your dad figure. So was he really the one that was your champion, was in Ish's corner, was like, you know, like, or who was, what was the biggest motivator for you, like, from the beginning of this whole thing? What is it? Because it's still got to be there today. And it can't just be money. Like, I get it. It can't. There's money is a big aspect of it. But it can't just be that. Like, what is the motivator for you?
The biggest motivator I have pre being married was chasing that feeling away. Like, I always had that feeling inside of my stomach. My body was like knowing that somebody else had control of my life and somebody else had control of my future. And knowing that in a snap of a finger, whether he had a bad day or whatever, that somebody could just affect my life that much. So at the time when that happened, my biggest motivator was honestly like trying to prove him wrong, like trying to like show him, to show Ken that he made a huge mistake at the time. Fast forward a couple years after, you know, I marry my wife, we have a couple kids and everything, and now we have four girls. Like my biggest motivator is those girls.
Yep.
Every fucking day, homie. Like there is no, there's like Travis and people that talk to me on every day and know me very well, they know that every goddamn day, there's no day that I'm not 100% going, you know, trying to figure something out, trying to speed up the operation, trying to make it bigger, trying to set up for the next summer, right? And it's always, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up is, you know, I thank the Lord, baby Jesus, because I believe in him, right? I have him, you know, tatted all over my body. I have him all over my shop, and, you know, I believe in the dude, right? And then after that, I pray to the Lord, thank you for giving me another, you know, day. Yep. And I get to work.
Good for you.
But my biggest motivation now is my girls. Pre my girls, it was the grind, homie. It was the fear of letting somebody else have control of my life. And it was the fear of disappointing my brother Eduardo, because like I said, he's been like a dad to me, like, yep. Since we've never been separated, me and Eduardo. And I have Jose too, is my brother, and I love Jose and Laura and everything, just me and him. When my mom passed away, we've always been together. Yep. The family kind of split up and went their own way, and me and him were always like, he was always taking care of me. He's like 2 years older than me, and he always like, he's like that one brother that's always on top of your shoulder and like making sure nobody's beating you up or making sure nobody's bullying you, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So dude, it was pre my girls, it was my brother like always pushing me and saying, you know, don't let that shit happen again. He literally looked at me when I told him what happened with me and Ken and we split up. He looked at me and he's like, you're going to be fine, man, but don't ever let nobody take control of your life again. And that's when it clicked to me.
I love it, man. Thanks for sharing that. You actually have like Travis and myself and Paul, we actually have, you have a really unique, you are in the minority in percentages of people who can actually make a massive impact. And let me tell you what I mean. You didn't get to where you are because you got lucky, right? Uh-huh. You had to hustle, you had to work, you had to grind. That doesn't mean that your motivation can't change and shift, but you actually have an opportunity to do great things, not just for your customers, but for the community, for the service, and you are trying to do those things. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect. We work through it. We learn. We grow from each of these things, but you're in a great spot, dude, to leave a kick-ass legacy for yourself, your family, and be a good role model for your kids. That you don't want to take for granted, right? So as you continue to grow this thing, is don't forget your core values, man. And I appreciate you talking about, you know, I do the same thing. Every morning before I look at any email, text message, whatever I do, I always pray. I give thanks and say, this is a platform I've been given to serve the masses. And when I can't serve the masses through Rhino, I get to do it through this podcast. So I want to get into some actual questions, if you guys are cool with it, like some of the other folks have asked, and that Travis might have, or Paul, that you might have too. And let's get into some of this tactical stuff to give these listeners some cool takeaway stuff on, like, how to accomplish some of the success that you've had, or even with you, Travis, as well. So you guys ready to jump in?
Yes, sir. I am.
Who wants to go first? Who wants to go first? Travis, you want to go first?
Yeah, I do. Obviously, Ishmael, one thing I will say is that Ishmael portrays an online persona that when you talk to him, he, as Chris said, he is actually, he's kind of a big softie, and money is never his.
I am.
Money's never what comes up in our conversations. And I think one of the things that Ishmael left out is one of his biggest motivations is he just wants to see what the process is to get to 100 million. It's not about the money at 100 million. He wants to see what that organizational chart looks like, yep, and what processes are involved. So that's one of his big motivations he left out. But Ishmael, one of the biggest questions everyone's going to have with you on here is, how? You're obviously the king of hustle, but how did you go to such, you know, I've been in business now 11 years, you're twice my size. And I'm going to put one more on that. Not just how did you get to, you know, that 30 million so quick, that I think your third year, but how did you do it with maintaining a 5-star reputation on arguably the hardest platform to do it on, which is Yelp? Because anyone can scale with marketing, but how do you do it by maintaining processes that leave satisfied customers?
Good question.
Dude, that is the best question. And you know what? I've gotten asked that question a ton of times on Avengers and on different social media platforms, but I've never gotten really a chance to answer it on the podcast. So to answer that question, Tram is 100% the process that I built, and you do too. You have a 5-star reputation on Google and a shit ton of reviews all over every platform, right? But how we do it on Yelp here in California, and just to give everybody a scope of how impactful Yelp is here in California, we have eight different Yelp accounts now, because we have eight different branches in Southern California, right? So every branch has its account. Total, I think with all the reviews that are filtered, non-filtered, I think we're over probably close to 2,500 to 3,000 reviews. And we maintain 4.5 to 5 stars on most of them. How did we do it is because I pick up the phone, bro. Like literally, if there's a 1-star review, for the last 5 years, I've been the one to pick up the phone. I've been the one to, hey, I screenshot the 1-star review. I send it over to management. They send me back the information. And within like, and I'm not even exaggerating this, within 30 to 60 seconds, we have that information. Obviously, because of service time, we could pull, see who did that review. And they send me the phone number. I pick up the phone and I tell them, hey, what is it that we went wrong? And sometimes I apologize, right? If we did mess up like hardcore, but most of the times what these people want to hear, what our customers want to hear is just like, hey, like you guys messed up. I need to vent to somebody, not just your management team, not just your CSR, right? Because they have other things to do. Like I want the owner to know that something went wrong, yep. Right? So I let them vent out. I let them vent out, and then I hit them with like our feeling of like who we are as a company, who I am as a person, and I make it really, really clear that whatever happened is going to get taken care of, whether it's refunding them $300 or $1,000, whatever it is that we needed to do, right, that they feel that we should do to make that experience go away or give us another shot. I make it happen, and the key to it is making it happen right then and there where the review is being written. Because if you wait a day or 2 hours or 3 hours, those people left that review and then they went and did something else. They got other things in their life that they took care of, that they need to take care of. But so if you wait, that emotional feeling, emotional state that they're in fades away.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you do talk to them, they're going to be like, well, yeah, well, you know, I'll take care of it. But you guys did this. But if you call them like right then and there, you'll get that. Well, you guys did this and da, 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 and you can feel the fucking anger in their voice. Right. Which that's where you want to get them. And that's how we're able to maintain the 5-star review, is because every time something happens, every time a 1-star review, and there's not that many, there's probably been, you know, in all our accounts, there's probably like, you know, 25-30 1-star right. reviews that happened. But the key to it is making sure that you take care of it right then and there and not letting it progress and not letting it trickle down. And then the second key, right, ready for this, is showing your management team of what you do to make that review go away,
yep.
or to get it updated, or to make sure that that customer experience went well. It's the first 4 years I was doing it myself. Now this year, as Travis knows and everybody knows, I built a badass management team, right? And now I don't just sit in my office when a 1-star review happens. I go over there to a training room, or I'll go to wherever it had, like if it's a service 1-star because of a technician did something wrong, I'll go to the manager and I'll put the customer on speaker and I'll talk to them while the service manager or the sales manager or whoever's there, I'll put them on speaker and I'll see them what I do. And then now they're doing it. So like the last, you know, probably 30 days, they've been taking care of everything and they've been doing a fucking stellar job of doing the same thing that I did, and knowing like it's not, we're not putting a show for these people. It's not like I'm telling them like, you know, do like, dude, we honestly really fucking care about our customer experience. Like everybody knows in my whole management team, we get an alert with every review that comes in, whether it's Yelp, Google, Facebook, everything. We get alerts on our email, right? And if they see it's a 1-star review, like they drop exactly what they're doing, whether it's a meeting, whether it's a whatever they're doing, they drop it and they go and take care of it.
All hands on deck. Paul, what you got, man?
All hands on deck.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chris, to ask a question. I'm actually slightly threatened by how good Travis's question was, his delivery, his voice. So anyhow, I have a question. So 0 to 30 million in a short period of time, like there had to be a lot of bumps along the way. That's completely pressure testing a business. What were the more painful, points in the process, and how did you fix them?
The most painful pain in the process was putting the wrong people in the wrong seat in the bus.
Oh yeah.
That was the most painful thing because some of the employees, the key employees that are still here, sometimes I put them in a wrong part and it was my fault, and going to them and telling them, hey, you know, maybe this isn't for you. I'm going to put you over here. Right. And then they would like, there's feelings involved. There's like all this, you know, drama involved and all that. So the most painful part is because we grew so fast, most companies like will put an employee on like a service management, right? Position, right? And they'll let it ride for like a year or 2 years or whatever, right? That's normal. Like I would get a service manager and I would put him there. And if it didn't instantly happen with the results that I wanted to, like within a month or two, I would put somebody else, right? And I would just keep trying people. And to me, I didn't feel as bad, right? Like, because I knew that I had a mission and I wanted to accomplish it. But to like them, they would feel like I was using them, right? And now that I look back into it, is I didn't hurt like shit ton of people, but a lot of people got hurt in the process because they didn't see the things that I saw. They didn't. They don't have my vision. They don't have my hunger. They don't have none of that. They just wanted to be part of the ride. And I did hurt some people along the process. But now, looking back retrospect, those people are still here, and they go like, I know why you did that, and I appreciate that you kept me along for this ride. You know what I'm saying? So it was definitely putting the wrong people. And then the second thing was like the most frustrating fucking part is trying to be sold on everything. Like Travis knows, right? Fucking vendors walk into your shop every day and they're like, oh yeah, I got this product for you. Or, hey, you should try this magazine, or you should try this mailer, or, hey, I'm the best PPC company in the world. And I, you know what I'm saying? And why we grew so fast, ready? Why we grew so fast, ready for this? Is because I try it. I held them accountable. And if they didn't do it, boom, next, boom, next, boom, next, right? Until I got the right partner, until I got the, if it was a magazine and they told me, hey, Ishmael, you spent $10,000 with us and we'll generate, you know, 100 calls and we'll make sure you do, you get the 5 ROI, 10 ROI, whatever it was, right? And I held them accountable for it. So I would try it and boom, if we didn't get the result that they promised me, boom, move on to the next one. And that's, I think that's probably one of the biggest keys that I had. I was fearless to try everything. And then once I found the things that worked, I kept doing it over and over, right? But most contractors wouldn't even try that because they don't have, they would want to, you know, try for a year and da 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 and get all this reporting and all this shit. Me, why I speed up the process so fast, because we would just try it, boom. If it worked, good. We keep doing it. If it didn't, boom, move on to the next one. And that's how our growth came about.
So you would say then, Ish, that you didn't actually grow through a plan. You just hustled it up there.
Hunter, dude, Travis, and this is probably like your biggest, cause the way me and you like operate, right? Like you're super methodical of everything that you do. Like you don't just fucking rush into it. And right. Like I, even in the short period amount of time that I've known you, like I've noticed that like you are super methodical of everything that happens. Like if you're going to try something, you're going to make sure it works. You're going to track the reporting. You're going to, you know what I'm saying? And I was the opposite. I was more like, fuck, let's try it. Let's do it. Boom, boom, boom. And I would just hustle as much as I could on everything we did.
Yeah. Well, I think it's cool that the key word that you were saying was accountability. I think there's a couple layers of accountability. One, when you're talking about your vision and your management not knowing your vision, that is on you, right, as a leader, right? Because you're the one that's I'm no different. You know, for those that are listening for the first time, I'm the CEO of a company called Rhino Strategic Solutions, and we're a digital marketing company for the trades and in the trades only since 2008. We have over 100 employees here. You know, I have if I have a web design that goes out that somebody doesn't like, it's on me. You know, ultimately, like if it gets rolled out wrong, there's communication breakdown, ultimately it's on me. It might have been somebody else who was handling the communication, but it's on me. It's my company. So I think, yeah, Paul, yep. Thanks, buddy. But there's that level of leadership and your passion isn't always easy to share and make sure everybody's on board with you too. You know, and I'm going to name drop for a second, but you guys know Gary Vaynerchuk was on the podcast on this week's episode, and he talks about, you know, he still puts everything on him. He's got 1,200 people at Vayner, you know, but it's his vision. It's his responsibility to make sure that they're up, you know, up to his level and up to and share his passion. If not, you may have the best employee in the world, but if they're cancer, they got to go. And that's going to happen.
Yep.
But you, what another thing that you had said was that, listen, I don't know about you guys, but even though I come from a sales background, I'm the easiest dude to get sold. Like, I think it's because I respect the hustle of the sale that I'm always like giving everybody the benefit of the doubt in certain scenarios. Like a dude comes to my, I don't know if we talked about this or not, but somebody comes to my door and sells me like a tire cleaner. I got like 5 tire cleaners I don't ever use, but I just respect the hustle of the guy coming and trying, you know what I mean? And that just comes from a place of, I think, empathy, right? Like caring about and understanding the scenario. But so coming in and getting vendors sold, do you think everybody goes through something similar like that too? But one thing you said that was really key is the accountability of when you onboarded them, you were starting to track things and seeing what works, but you were willing to try it. I think a lot don't even go down that path. They're just too afraid to try everything, you know? And I'm a big advocate of, and we're going to be different here, Travis, with you and I, and really even Paul's like kind of being between both of us, but I don't worry, okay? Like, you worry about 90% of the shit that never happens, so I don't do it. and I only worry about the 10% of shit that actually does happen. And what that allows me to do is move fast and be, you know, and move forward. And if something breaks, I fucking fix it, right? Or you figure it out, or you lean on your team to fix it. So I appreciate
that's exactly me right there.
I appreciate
you. I envy and hate you that about you because I'm anxiety ridden to the core, and probably you're right. The 90% of stuff made up in my mind doesn't exist. So.
Yeah. See, look at all that time you wasted.
Hey, Travis, let's go on to this one. Remember when we were sitting down, me, you, and Tom, and we were going through our financials?
Tommy Mello.
And you were like, holy shit. Dude, I'm going to tell him the story. Howard. I don't give a fuck. You know me. Remember when we were going through the financials, you're like, so Ishmael, like, look at this shit. Like, look at this shit. Like, dude, I would have a fucking anxiety attack if my accountant didn't do this and this, and that. They were missing a couple of things, right? Remember that shit? What'd I tell you? I'm like, dude, I don't worry because I know I can fix it, right? Like, I don't worry about little things like that, even though it's a huge thing in the financial, like in our P&Ls and everything, that they weren't accounting properly. Like, within like a fucking 30 minutes, right? I told you, I'm going to go clean it up. I'm going to hire an accountant. I'm going to get this done. Da-da-da-da-da. Boom, done. Now our P&L is fucking clean, sharp, right?
Ishmael, how much money did we find in 3 minutes?
Bro, a couple hundred thousand easily. But goes back to your question, Chris. Goes back to your comment. Like I don't worry about things that I don't like. And that's a huge thing. Our financials is a huge thing, obviously. But like, I try to keep my focus on what I know, right? Like, me driving that fucking Lambo that I built is keeping focus on the road up ahead. Right. And then I let everybody else do the cleaning behind me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you can't do it all, man. You got to have smart people on your team. Like, I want to give my shout out to my boy, Paul. No. Tall Paul. Tall Paul's VP of sales for Round Stage Solutions. And he's my guy. Like, he's my right hand dude. And he's super smart, super methodical. And he's a great critical thinker. And you got to have that type of leadership on your team. So there's my shout out to you, Tall Paul.
I appreciate that.
All right, let's get into some more. Hey, I'm going to shift gears for just a second. All right, Ish. So
go.
I know that you are a private label, right?
Yep.
So this question has come up before, and it actually kind of came up on a earlier podcast that we shot. But what made you decide to go private label? Like, what was the thing that said, "Yep, I'm gonna be private label"?
Daikin came up to me. Their one of their regional reps came up to me, and they had, like, that goes back to the same thing. Like, they were trying to sell. Like, everybody's trying to sell you on something. But at the time, I was going through a rough period with Train, right? Like, when they were trying to, like, present the amount of product to us so we could private label it, I was going in a really bad direction with Train. Train owes me a shit ton. To the point right now, I'm going to talk shit. They still owe me, like, $131,000 that they're not going to pay me on because they're fucking scumbags. But that's not here or there.
How do you really feel?
I mean, Travis?
Ishmael and I don't agree on this fact. but, Ishmael, you have – listen – you know me, I bleed red first, orange second, but your issue was not with Train. Your issue was with their vendor.
Yep.
Distributor.
Yep. Distributor. Yep. So
it was
this
previous,
distributor
it wasn't with Train. Train is actually a badass product. I was actually in at war with Ferguson at the time. And again, Ferguson those guys, if you know me, I keep it 100% real. Like, whoever's a fucking scumbag in the industry, I'm going to call them out for it. Right? Ferguson's one of them. So at the time I was with Ferguson, and then Daikin came in here and they're like, Ishmael, dude, we don't usually do this private label for Amana. Everybody private labels the Goodman product, everybody and their mother, right? But you can't, like, they pick and choose what private label goes on the Amana product. And they had already read a story there. They had already known who we are, customer service and everything, and our installation process. And when they came up to us, I was in a bad place with Ferguson and they were promising me the world. So they came in and they said, look, we're going to take care of everything. We'll stock up your shops. We'll put VMIs in there. We'll do everything for you. Right. And I was like, it was literally, the guy was here for like 15 minutes and he wasn't that good of a rep to sell me on it. I was just in a bad time with Ferguson. So I went like, go ahead and do it. Like, literally I called up my Ferguson rep and I told him, I text him, come and pick up all your shit. Boom. So 30 minutes later, there was trucks coming in here.
I don't doubt it. So help me understand. Is it did you decide to do private label then because you don't care what the logo is on the box, or you want it to be your logo on the box? Like, what was because do you think the homeowner really cares about the actual
no
itself?
Nope. Nobody gives a flying you know what? About
oh,
what?
Now, oh, now you're on there. PC?
Now he's muted.
Why? Okay, why I did it? There's a couple of reasons why I did it. Number one, because they came in, they did a fantastic job setting us up. But number two, when they told me that I came with a lifetime unit replacement, my fucking mind exploded of how many ways I could market this. Billboards, gotcha. on TV, on radio, on digital. Like, my mind exploded as in telling a story to our customers on how we're able to private label our unit. That was one of the huge reasons of the warranty, the lifetime unit replacement, which distinguished us from every other contractor. Yep. But the number two reason is, and one of the most important reasons I want everybody to know, is the brand equity. Like, dude, you got to understand, 5 years down the road, 4 years down the road, 3 years down the road, whenever if the homeowner sells that home or whatever, the first thing they do when something goes wrong, they go to the unit outside or inside or the thermostat, whatever, right? Well, if they see a big old NextGen logo, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to Google it. And if they Google it, who do you think is going to pop up? Me. So I get that customer back, right? I get, and then new customers that don't know who we are, whether they sold their home or whatever, get to see our logo, and now they're going to use this again and again. So brand equity, dude, is the most important thing. Like, I'm not going to be in business trying to sell Train or Lennox and push their product and them get the brand recognition, and they keep making all the money when I could be putting my label on it, right? And I could be getting that repetitive business all over again.
I completely understand the market.
Does Travis have an opinion there?
Listen, Ishmael hooked me up with the same guys that he used, and I think they offer a very competitive product, and they were very kind. Listen, we talked last time on my podcast about vendor relationships, and my challenge to Ishmael, you know, if you had a great relationship with, you know, Train directly back then, and you weren't fighting with Ferguson, do you think you would have even made that switch?
Nope.
And that's where,
dude,
I'm at.
You brought on one, dude, Travis, you brought on one of the most important points in the contracting business. It's relationships.
Yep.
I built a relationship with Train, and that's why I was able to speed up the process of growth. Cause, dude, if you're running our second year, we did like $18.1 million or $19 million. Like, the cash that you need to operate that, like, it's not like I had fucking $10 million in the bank and I decided to start a contracting business. That would be stupid. If I had $10 million in the bank, I would do something else, right? But it goes back to that relationship. I had a massively good relationship with Ferguson at the time. And they were like, dude, just go. Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. We'll give you all the equipment. We'll give you all the parts. We'll give you everything. And you could pay us in 30, 60 days or whatever. Dude, that helped me out a lot, right?
Yeah.
So no, to answer your question, Trav, I would, if Ferguson would have done what they've stated on the paper and promised me, I would have never left them, because that's the dude I am.
But so look at the growth curve though. You know, when you're small and you don't have that brand equity yet, going with a big name brand gets you instant credibility. Yeah, credibility.
We talked about that.
Yes.
Where now Ishmael's brand, and I hope my brand can kind of stand on their own. Yep. It's not as needed.
Yep.
Right.
So I think there's something there, but you know, and Ishmael, if you had $10 million, seeing how our industry is going, you would actually buy a home service company, buy three more smaller ones, tuck them under, and then resell it.
Now I would. Back in the day, I wouldn't. But now, because I see where the industry is going, and when people talk, and we could get into the different subject of acquisitions, but I'm no expert at it, homie.
Yeah.
Like I'm not no Leland Smith. I'm not no Ken Haynes. I'm not no, you know, Ken Goodridge and those guys, but I know and I see what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
Dude, we can play the same game. I'm just playing in a smaller scale, right? But eventually I'll get to their scale too.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick, Paul, before you ask a question, because it looks like you're okay. Oh, whoa, shoot. Ooh. He's like, yep. He's like, Travis, this is your show. Travis, it's the Travis Rinke show.
Hey, Travis, honestly, you're bringing up fire points, bro. Like, those vendor relationships, like, people need to understand. Like, that's probably, we could do a whole podcast of just of building relationships to be able to cash flow the business. You know what I'm saying?
Paul's going to fly in for the next five episodes just to make sure he's here and like setting his stakes in the ground. Yeah. Paul, listen, you're doing great, buddy. Keep it up. Listen, I'm going to shift gears one more time too, only because I'm not sure how deep into this thing we are, but I think we're probably somewhere around the 45 minute mark. Okay.
Yep.
So for the sake of time, but we got some good stuff going on. And I want to be respectful of all y'all's time. I want to shift gears real quick to something that we talked about, on our podcast, Travis, that I know is a hot topic for you. So this is a pretty decent shift, but it's something I'm passionate about as well. I just had a meeting with my with our web design team this morning on a, you know, we've built thousands of sites over the past, 12 years for HVAC contractors, plumbing contractors, and I know exactly what I want from them. I want to make sure that without scrolling anywhere, they can see what they do, where they do it, and what's the cost of the site or what's the promotion they have to offer. So price promotion, one of the two. I want to know what is the call to action that's there that before they scroll so I can get them in the site and to convert quickly. And it's actually a bookable lead. I know you're passionate about. I want you to ask the question. Ask the question that we talked about. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know.
And then let's get into that conversation. See what
about my website being the best website in the nation? Hell yeah. I got the best website in the nation. Thank you.
So now that we know Ishmael's stance, now ask your question.
Does your website offer online pricing?
Not yet.
Well, it ain't the best website in the world then.
This is so good.
I do. Not yet. And the key word is yet. Dude, I know you do it. And I know, I don't know how successful it's been. I haven't tested that because of the massive growth. I've been here at NextGen, but I will probably be in. Me personally, I don't think the public is there yet. I don't think the consumer is there yet where they could click, pay, install, right? Like, I don't think the consumer mind and the marketing is there yet, but it is something that we're going to work towards because I know that the shift in consumer is going to happen in the next, 3 to 5 years, Travis? But not yet, but yes, we are going to work on it 100%.
Yeah. So we're talking online pricing, and, you can have any car just driven to your door at this point. There's certainly a shift in how people are purchasing things, and I want it to be kind of on the forefront of that. But one of the biggest things you and I talk about, Ishmael, is, in terms of maybe I can pull it out of you, but what is the future of home service contracting? What do you think the most successful contractors will be predicated on?
Because I know where the LSA ads came about, why the LSA ads came about, and for people that don't know what LSA is, the local service ads, you gotta pay attention to what Google is. Google controls 78% of marketing around the world, okay? 78% of all marketing is controlled by Google, or around 78 or 80%, right? I pay attention to what Google does, like left and right, right? And when they came up with those three boxes on top, those are called local service ads. That's when we pulled the trigger to do multi-locations because those locations go based on proximity, on reviews and responsiveness, right? If you could have multiple locations and have a budget in there for those locations, then you could pull a ton of leads from them. When I paid attention to that, right? Why does Google want you to put a phone? They assign the phone number and it bounces to their call center and then it bounces back to our call center, right? Am I right, Chris?
Yep. So yeah. So as long
they're recording everything.
Yes, and you have to listen to
that.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing.
Yep.
That's all they're doing. The one thing that Google doesn't have and they would probably never have is the labor force, but also the terminology behind the home service. And that's what they're recording is all the terminology, all the different accents, right? And where I see this going is because in the next year, a few years, I feel that the voice is going to take over, right? Everything's going to be, hey Google, can you send me a plumber? Hey Alexa, can you send me a technician? Right? I know that's where it's going, and it's going to go based on proximity, reviews, and responsiveness, right? To dispatch them, I think. What's going to happen in the next, it could be 10, 15 years, is that Google, Amazon, and some of these huge websites, Home Depot and all these guys, people are going to go online and purchase the equipment direct from them because Google is smart enough to know that there's a shit ton of money that could be made on that margin of purchasing equipment and reselling it to the consumer. And then it's going to get dropped off to their site, and then the consumer is going to buy a labor package for that install for the systems. I don't think they're going to get into the service industry because there's too many factors there, and the accountability to tracking and all that's not there yet. But I feel like they're going to hit the replacement market, whether it's solar panels, whether it's heating and air conditioning, whether it's windows, right? garage doors. I feel like in the next 10 years, that's where it's going to go. It's going to be voice activated. You're going to go online and you're going to purchase everything, put it on your credit card or on financing, and then people are just going to show up in trucks and do all the labor.
All right, that's
where
whole,
I feel it's going.
That's a whole nother podcast because we can talk about that. But you know, when you and I talk, Ishmael, a lot, it's we both believe a lot in reputation-based contracting. And I think for online pricing to be successful, you really got to be able to stand on your own reputation. And so some people will say, oh, you know, we can, it'll never work. You can never sell the value not being in person. And I think the way that we've been successful at it, that you could be as well, is that my reputation is my value.
Yep.
You know, I didn't exactly get 5,000 plus reviews by doing a bad job.
Right.
You know, so that's.
Hey, Travis, people that think like that, it's like literally saying, hey, I can't go to that restaurant because I haven't tasted it. You know what I'm saying? Like most people go to restaurants because of the reviews. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Or because they heard somebody try it and they're like, oh man, this restaurant's amazing. So when they say, oh, you can't build enough value, it's like, dude, the restaurant industry has been doing it forever, right? The reviews are their lead generation for them. If people Google their name and it's 5 stars and it's amazing food, people are going to go there, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing for us. It's our value is going to be our reputation. And to answer your question, we've said this on Avengers and we said this on multiple platforms. Review-based contracting is 100,000,000% the future. If you do not believe what's going to happen with all these reviews and all this information that Google and Yelp and all these review platforms are gathering, like that's the 100% the future, bro. It's not like those people that are falling behind the old school mentality that have the 3 stars and 2 stars, they're losing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars Ooh. Every fucking year because of their reputation.
Yep. Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head, Travis, is it's easier to give online pricing. I think you got, and this is my world too, right? It's been my world. I was always trying to figure this stuff out because at the end of the day, what I'm tasked to do is bring in new bookable service install leads, plumbing leads, whatever it is, that are not past customers. That's my job. So in order to do those things, once you get people on the website, I got to get them to actually convert, right? I got to get them to actually want to call you to do business with you. So that is my job. So part of that process is, you know, how many calls did we listen to where they didn't end up booking the call because they wouldn't give them even a ballpark? Yep. And I've always had this pain point of like, if I could just get some of these guys to do it. But the caveat is, man, if you're below 4, if you're a 3.9 stars and below, you're in deep shit, right?
Absolutely.
So you cannot, yep. You could not give online pricing if you had a star below that, because I think the conversion rate would be atrocious. So I don't think it would matter. So I think reputation actually
and
matters.
And we do that, Chris. We actually ballpark people on the phone, especially on the heavy season, because these customers are calling 20 other companies and they can't get to them fast enough, right? And sometimes we tell them, hey, yeah, we could be there in a couple of days and they don't want to wait. Well, what's a ballpark? And that's when we turn it over to a project manager. And dude, just to give you an example, this year, in the summer, I was still grinding on the phones. There was days that I was closing on the phone myself. I was closing, you know, $60,000 to $100,000 a day.
Damn.
Just on the phones. Texting Damn. People on the phones, emailing, sending contracts over, e-signing, doing all that shit every single day. Because there was so many leads and I have like 14 project managers. I have a shit ton of sales reps or project managers that can handle that volume, right? But still people are like, no, if you give me a price over the phone, I'll do it. When could you install it? Da, da, da. And I was pricing people over the phone. Huh, Travis? I think there was times when me and Travis were texting back and forth. I was like, dude, I just sold like 60 grand today.
Every day I'm hustling.
That inside sales position yeah. going forward as this model, you know, moves forward is going to be more and more important. Yep. You know, part of the my problem right now is I'm one of the only ones, my brother and I, that are in the office that can respond to these more technical questions. Yeah. And we keep saying, hey, we're going to have to start training an inside salesperson that can, you know,
yep.
get the size for the customer, walk them through our value, do a video chat. It's consumers are changing the way they purchase. They don't want people in their house for 3 hours anymore.
Yeah. 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 And I think COVID exposed a little bit of that too. So like it kind of forced everybody into that scenario a little bit.
Yep.
Hell yeah, they did.
So I know that, and I don't want to go any much further down that path. I really was just kind of interested to see. I think that ballpark figure is the next best option if you don't give an actual price.
Yep.
So that is my stance.
Transparency.
So because people are going to ask, if you give them nothing, I think the odds are greater that you're going to get the lead than not get the lead. I mean, get the customer than not get the customer, or at least the opportunity. Fair?
Agreed.
Fair.
Paul. It might be subtle, but I would say, like, even calling someone a project manager versus a comfort consultant, comfort advisor, salesperson, whatever, like, that's subtle, but that's a big deal.
I like that.
What
too.
Do you call yours,
you mean
Travis?
Conceptual, yeah, like perception wise or conceptually, yeah. Is that you mean? Yeah. Like, okay.
Comfort advisors. Yeah. He always says that. And when I first started talking to Ishmael, he would always say project managers. And I'm like, what kind of big projects are you managing? And then I realized that was a sales team. But dude, I do.
They are big projects, bro.
That's what consumers want.
Yep.
They don't want a comfort consultant. Yep.
So I want to.
And next time, Chris, I'll tell you our process on how the comfort advisor, I mean, the project manager goes in there, sells, and then just, dude, it's pretty fucking bad. Well, we came up with the 5-star customer experience, and the project manager is in charge of that customer experience from start to finish.
Got it. So for sure, I'm sure there'll be a caveat. Or, I mean, another part two to this one too. By the way, we still have to do one on the review stuff too. Let's get that booked. Got that, Kyle? So
Travis is the king of reviews.
So, hopefully we've had. Some of the people on the Avengers page submit questions. So Joseph G, hopefully we tackled one of yours. Mark Anthony, we hit one of yours when he was talking about surviving year one, do's and don'ts. You kind of talked about that already. I want to add, since we're talking about, what large contracts are you project managing? Or what large projects are you doing? Bradley, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher this. Mercer. God, I'm so sorry, Brad, if I destroyed your name. But
I did.
Okay, thanks. How is it pronounced, Paul? Do you know?
No, I don't. I can't see it.
What an asshole. He just said he did.
Hey, Paul's a triple OG, man. Damn. I thought you liked Paul, man.
What I'm talking cool. about.
He's from the streets of Ohio. Bradley, okay, so Brad wrote, bidding large service contracts bigger than what your team can handle. Did you see that? So bidding large service contracts bigger than
you know what it is? You don't know what it is, Chris? Like, there is projects that I like not want to do because, like, number one, it takes too much time and the timing is not there. Like, especially in the summer, we want to, like, install, collect, right? Keep going. Like, if somebody comes at me in the middle of a summer and they're like, oh yeah, we got a school that we want you to do and it's got 20 package units and it's in frames. And I'm like, nah, hell no, man. You're going to tie up 4 or 5 of my crews there. For in the middle of a summer when I could be slamming deals all day long. So you have to learn when to walk away and when you could be like, okay, cool. If you guys want to hold till after summer when it slows down, then I'll go ahead and help you with your project. But if not, like, dude, just move on. Don't get stuck on those big projects just because it has a big number and you're, oh yeah, I'm going to replace these 20 package units, you know, in the middle of a summer and it's for $500,000. It's like, okay, but you could have done 50 installs at $10,000 and collected that $500,000 in one day or 2 days or 3 days, right?
Yeah, that's good.
We cherry pick the same way.
I think that's a common thing that happens though, right? Because you're like, oh my gosh, it's a big project, but you're not thinking about, if you think of it on the
short. Most people just take on the project. And it's like, dude, you got to learn to say no to those projects or learn to say, yeah, let's do it. I have enough people, it's slow or whatever. You just have to look into the scenario that you're in.
And if Brad was talking about like commercial maintenance contracts, I don't think Ishmael or I are, I have a few, but we're not big in that arena.
Yeah, I'm not.
Hell no.
I'm not sure.
Too slow for me, homie. Residential's like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, people always ask me, how come you don't do a commercial? I'm like, it's too slow, man. Like, people are just, you got to submit a quote and they got to approve it through the board and the board has to give it funding and da 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 da. I'm like, dude, we go to hug customers, hook them with our next gen product and warranties and boom, go to the next one.
Okay.
You know what I find? I find the commercial guys are scared of residential and the residential guys are just like indifferent toward commercial. Do you find that?
Yeah.
You didn't want to say scared, did you, Paul? You didn't want to say scared of commercial.
I didn't. Hell no, we're not.
He switched the word up.
And commercial's too slow.
Yeah, I hear you. A lot of truth to what you just said, Paul. We see it a lot in our tests. So, I mean, everything we mostly focus on is residential add-on replacement service.
Different processes.
Yep, different deal. Yeah. Although there's some super successful commercially driven companies. So I'm going to do two more questions for the sake of time because we're like an hour into this thing.
Let's do it, baby.
So two more quick questions, and they're going to be two completely different questions. The first one is, because I want to get to at least one more question that somebody posted on the Avengers page, is how do you motivate your team to get higher turnover rates?
Moolah.
Money. Money, man.
Money. Hey, homie, let me tell you something. Yeah. People that don't, let me tell you something. Cause people don't realize that, like, yeah, people love working here at Nexion. I have a badass fucking culture. I'm building the best fucking, like, well, Travis's might be better than my operation, but I'm building the top fucking operation in the nation. I don't care who it is. When I'm done with DataQ, when I'm done with everything, like, it's a badass fucking company. But at the end of the day, people want money. Okay. Technicians, project managers, installers, right? So how we motivate them, it's put bounties, put goals for them, put bonuses for them, right? Keep them chasing that carrot. Because if you're just going to pay people hourly, they're going to go do their job, go to the next one, go do their job, go to the next one, right? But if you actually put a bonus structure, if you actually put a plan, like a growth plan, like, dude, there's people here that, and it's so amazing for me to say this now, there's people here at NextGen that started as a tune-up technician, and now they're project managers, right? There's people that were installers, and now they're technicians, right? There's people in the call center that were just taking calls, and now they're doing something with management, like, there's actual growth plan, and I tell this in every single meeting that I get to go on, is I go in there and I tell them, look, guys, if you guys pour your heart into it and we see that you want to grow with the company, we're going to pick you and we're going to put you in a different position in the bus, right? It's that, and obviously telling them, like, look, as you get more responsibilities, you're going to make more money here in the company. So how do you motivate them? Moolah, homie.
Yeah.
It's money.
I am a huge fan.
And culture, sorry.
Huge. Well, that's exactly where I was going is, two things. I'm a huge fan of pay for performance. I think you pay for somebody being exceptional. I think you pay exceptional people well. But in order to help make them exceptional, you got to make sure that your culture is on point. You care about them. You give them all the tools and confidence in the world to be amazing at the sales position or whatever it is. So I believe in those in those two pieces of things. Were you going to say something?
Well, and that culture is making sure that you're doing right by that customer.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the parts that is missed in the industry. And that's not always, you know, selling or not selling, but these guys, you know, they can do simple math, right? And if it's a slow shoulder season and they got a compressor down, you know, we have no winter here in Arizona. So they lose a compressor on a heat pump and there's no incentive for them to turn that. Well, they, in their head, get 6 hours of labor just to go put in a compressor. Why would they ever turn that over to the sales team? You know, so it's got to be balanced both ways so that it's always for the best interest of the customer.
Yeah. Makes sense. Wait, hey,
exactly.
So,
and Travis, you're a triple OG, Travis. Dude, you just hit that shit in the, bro. You just hit, like, if you guys could take one thing from this whole podcast is what he just said right now.
He's like Ishmael's fanboying over Travis right now.
We're best friends.
Oh, dude, he's my little homie.
I know, man. I know you.
I
guys
look up to this dude.
I know you guys are tight. I'm just busting your guys' chops. So hey, listen. Last thing I want to ask you, and you just talked about it, is let's get on this topic of DataQ. I know you want to talk about it. I know it's part of your big plan. I know you're building out your spot there. I know you're getting pretty close on getting it done, but let's talk about it real quick. Okay. And I want you to help everyone understand what the hell is DataQ, right? So if they'd never heard it, didn't watch the Service Titan webinar, or haven't been on the pages, like, what are you getting into, man? I know this is like your next gen. I'm doing air quotes, next gen, like it's part of your deal. Let's talk about it. What's DataQ, man? Like, what is DataQ?
DataCube came about because of 2019 and me and Travis had a ton of conversation. 2019 last quarter kicked my fucking ass to the ground, bro. Like, I was literally, like, you know, burnt. I was grinding for 4 years. I just didn't know where to go, right?
It happens,
Tom Howard came over to my shop because, you know, Aura sent him, and we had a good conversation. He showed me exactly what was going on inside the company, which I didn't at the time. I was just focused on top, grow, yep. Right? And Tom Howard came in here last quarter and would slowed it down for me, and he literally chopped up the whole operation and how it should have came about. Well, because of that, those conversations and those 3 months that came about, I decided that there was no way I was never going to know what's inside the company anymore. So I came up with DataCube. DataCube is literally a live KPIs on everything that's going on inside your company. Like, there, most companies have two or three people pulling reports on service time and going through every line item and getting, sometimes there's human error in it, sometimes there's not, whatever it is, right? Like, when you get to a certain size in company, the most important thing you got to, like, focus on is the reports inside your company, whether it's financial reporting, whether it's your technicians, your project managers, your CSR, everything that's inside the company, you need to focus on that. That's like your dashboard on the Lamborghini that you built, right?
Yep.
And that's why DataCube came about. So we have 9 different metrics that we're tracking now on DataCube, right? The dashboards are already built out for the sales metrics, for the financing, for the CSRs, for HVAC, for plumbing, and then the marketing. And there's 3 more KPIs that are getting added to DataCube. And that's where the name came about. It's 9 different screens, like a Rubik's Cube. It's 9 screens that tell you exactly what's going on inside of the company. The best ones is the revenue and capacity. Like, dude, it's literally going to be an overview of inside what's it going inside the company. And that's going to be the middle board that I have behind me. The middle board is going to be an overview of everything that's happening inside the company. And then all the boards are going to be around it telling you exactly what's going on. So the revenue and capacity, I'm not going to get too far into it, but the revenue and capacity is literally going to tell you your average ticket for the day, how many installs you have, how many calls, and it's going to tell you your capacity of calls every single day. If you're running, if you need 20 calls left, or if you're missing 15 calls for the technician, you're running at 68% capacity. If you could handle 20 installs a day and you only have 12, you know what I'm saying? It's going to tell you exactly every metric inside the company on that revenue and capacity board. So people, instead of going through reports or calling people or as the owners calling management and bugging them, hey, what's going on? Do we have calls? Do we not have calls? Or do we have installs? What's going on with the install? What's our average ticket? It's just, you look at that screen, it's going to tell you, okay, cool, fuck, we have, you know, we're able to do 250 calls a day. We only have 220. You better start outbounding, and management's going to take control of that.
And the most important part about KPIs is that training your staff on how they can affect those KPIs to change it.
Yes.
Because looking at it does nothing if you don't know how to action something else.
So 50% of the battle is displaying the KPIs, and the other 50% of the battle is knowing what to do with those KPIs. You know what I'm saying? So like we have a recall and warranty metric that's going to be able to tell us everything of every technician, every install team, what their strengths and weaknesses are on every single metrics in there. And then we have the review metrics, how it affects the culture in the company. So Travis, 100%, half of the battle is pulling that. And then the other half is knowing what to do with that information and how to enforce it to your team so they can make the company, number one, more profitable, right? Number two, more efficient. And number three, the customer experience gets perfected.
I think I wrote on my paper as Travis was, I mean, right before Travis said that, I just showed him that KPI gives you a layer of accountability, right? Because now you've got actual metrics to measure people and make them better too. I also love the idea of it being kind of like a live scoreboard, you know, for some of it.
Yep.
What it does is it makes the business more tangible to those that don't quite understand it, kind of like you, man, in 2019. Listen, you got to be humble to say, man, I'm going. My gross revenue is great, but if your net profit is shit, like what are we doing, right? Yep. But it's
what
not.
What do we do?
But
that's exactly what happened to me.
But it's not game over. It's reset, fix it. You did that, right? So
exactly what we did.
Now when you scale and using this type of information, that by the way, you know, we'll have them share the website at the end. And you use these metrics, you can legit scale a super healthy company based on that data and hold everybody accountable. It's basically like a sweet little tool and metrics. I love data. We make every decision here based off of data because we have everything. There's nothing you don't have to guess on anything. So I love the fact that you're building that out and pushing it. Some people already have this stuff available to them, like at least some of it, that you just don't use because it takes time to do it or effort to do it. And let's face it, like,
that's the problem.
It's, who wants
that's
to do
that's the
it?
Problem. And that's why DataCube is so important, is because we're doing all the hard work for it. Well, not we, the system is doing all the hard work for you.
Sure.
It's extracting all that information. It's not pulling reports, putting them on a whiteboard, how everybody does it, right? How many calls it, like literally most of the contracting businesses that I've been to, they have a huge whiteboard and they have everybody's name and all their KPIs on that board. That's where I saw the opportunity. And that's where I saw that our contracting business was outdated on the reporting side. And that's all DataCube is. It's live reporting, live KPIs, and knowing that what's going inside your company without being, you know, calling 100 different people or walking to the whiteboard or seeing if somebody made a mistake.
What's the website again? What's the website address?
DataCube.ai.com.
DataCube.ai.
And we're in the infant stages. It's still gonna. We're still building out the. Like I know we got some processes that we're building out right now, but dude, in 30 days, you will be 100% going on that website and doing all the demos, signing up for that. I'll give you pricing on there, everything. And it's not just for service time. It's going to be for Field Edge. It's going to be for House Call Pros, anything.
Yeah, so for our listeners real quick, though, too, by the time this thing posts, that will be done. So it should be good to go by then. Just so everybody knows, we're recording this on October 15th, just so you guys can make a reference to the date.
Ishmael, if I wanted to have a data cube center, do I have to have a Starbucks with a Starbucks barista in it?
No. You have to have one at least. Dude, I can't wait till I show you guys this. I'm going to go live as soon as my data cube centers, the smart dispatching centers are up. But no, dude, honestly, and you don't need these fancy screens, bro. Like, you could pull this on your laptop, sure, on your computer and sure, all that, and see that. But why I display them the way I display them is because I have certain screens throughout the whole operation so people can actually, absolutely, see their performance. In the training room, we have the sales KPI, we have the HVAC KPI, the plumbing's KPI, and what else did we have? That's it. We have those three screens, and you see people after their meeting, they're like right there on the TV, like, oh shit, look at my average ticket, 14,000. Oh, look, I ran three calls. Oh, look at my closing percentage. Like, you see four or five people all the time there. And those are the people that you want to keep pushing.
Absolutely.
Because they actually care about what's going on.
100% a fan of that. 100%. Because again, it makes it tangible. And listen, if you're competitive and you're sitting third, you want to be number one, too. Like, number one, like,
fuck
you,
yeah,
you see it. It's in your hell face. Yeah. And so do your peers around, yep, you. And so I'm a fan, yep, of that. So I want to end with this real quick. And I respect this piece of it. And why I want to talk about it is, and you guys both know, I mean, since 08, when I was doing this, myself and my wife, building out websites doing SEO, doing pay-per-click for trades, we listened to every fucking phone call that comes through every website since then. Putting it in Excel spreadsheets. Mrs. Jones called. It was a during hours call. It was a service lead. Mary was the CSR that took it. She booked it. She didn't book it. It was a new customer. In fucking Excel spreadsheets. Whereas now we have this big, beautiful, yep, dashboard built out 12 years later. But it was the data that always drove the company. We were talking about facts, yep, every single month. It's no different today. We just have more data. So you pushing it out to the industry is, I feel like, something I've been trying to do for a freaking decade. It was to make sure that you have all this stuff to track, do it. But what I learned with y'all contractors is it was easier if I just did it for you. And I was more successful if I just did it for you. I say that respectfully. And I was okay with, yep, that. Once I learned that was how the relationship needed to work because it was a legit relationship, I did it. And it made us both, yep, more successful together. So I appreciate you pushing on this. Can't wait to see it fully built out. I appreciate your time on, you know, and you asking that too. And I know we've all had conversations about it. Paul, do you have any closing thoughts for Ish?
No, I would ask this though. I mean, you go from zero to 30 on your way to 100 million. You get a lot of good friends and relationships along the way, but sometimes there's some haters. Do you have a message for any of the haters out there?
Oh, look at you.
Hey, don't worry about what I do, homie. Like, the one thing I'm going to tell every hater in the industry, like, bro, I'm 33 years old. I'm not going anywhere. I'm fucking hungrier than ever. The one thing that I do want that has resonated to me, and Travis has been telling me this for a while, like, losers focus on winners. Winners focus on winning. Like, that's Word. The one fucking mindset that I have for 2020, 21, 22, 23 to grow to 100. I'm going to focus on me. I'm going to focus on winning. That's all I'm going to focus on. Dude. And the haters, man, I just laugh at them.
We're building the industry, man. We're not tearing it down.
That's right.
With the industry, for the industry, homie.
I love it.
Respect. I will tell you this. In a 12-year span of me being a digital marketing company for the trades, when I started this, I was like an OG in digital marketing for the trade. I was like one of the only dudes that did straight digital marketing only for the trades. Now there's a bunch of people. I hear all people kinds of talk all kinds of shit about me. And you know how much I care? Zero. Because I don't waste a second focusing on anybody else or anything I don't have control of, because I know who I am. I know what my company is. I know we do good shit. I know we're fucking smart. I know we built a ton of companies, multi millions of dollars, and I don't have to worry about anybody else but what I'm doing, because nobody else has any impact on me. Neither you. People are going to talk shit because they're intimidated, you know, or because maybe they're scared or insecure. But you know what? That's not your problem. You do you. You be a good human being. You keep serving the community. You keep, you know, being for the brand, for the industry, dude. And no doubt you crush 100 milli.
Absolutely.
So appreciate you guys. Appreciate you being on here, man. I'm sure we'll have a part two of this thing too. But listen, listeners, you can learn so much from even just the two guys we had in here, reaching out to them too, because they're both completely open books. They want to be able to help you, and we'll share their information as long as you guys are good with them. I'm pretty sure you are.
Yeah, going on Avengers, man. On Avengers, we're spitting fire all day, man.
Yeah, if you go on the Facebook group.
It's a badass group in there.
Yeah, if you go on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, you can go to Service Avengers, and it's got like the little little Captain America shield in there that you recognize it. But go in there and join the group and ask questions, whatever. It's a great little community to, if you had to ask questions on, to piggyback off of. There are no stupid questions you can ask. Everybody's not going to look at your question and be like, this guy's an idiot. No, people want to help. And that's what these guys are going to do as well. And that's the whole reason we have this podcast, is to do exactly that. So listen, appreciate all the reviews, all the comments. If you're first time listening, remember to hit that subscribe button so you keep coming back and getting information just like this from some of the best in the industry that have been on here. And we'll continue to do that. So till next time, Paul, I appreciate you. Ish, I appreciate you. Travis, appreciate you. You guys keep crushing it in the industry and keep paving the way for the next generation. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to The Point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please consider leaving us a review in the App Store. And don't forget to share with your friends. Till next time, kick some ass.
Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.